It's time for Twig. This week in Google, we've got Alphabet's quarterly results, and there's some interesting points to be made about its advertising model. In fact, Jeff has a lot to say about advertising. Podcasts, they're hot again. And Facebook at 15. What a teenager it is. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This week in Google, episode 494 for Wednesday, February 6th, 2019. Commodified. This week in Google is brought to you by Cashfly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with Cashfly CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. And by Grammarly. Grammarly is a communication tool that helps people improve their writing to be mistake-free, clear, and effective. Start writing confidently by going to grammarly.com/twig and get 20% off a Grammarly premium account today. And by OnDeck. Are you a small business owner in need of capital today? Well, OnDeck can help. With over $10 billion in loans and A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, OnDeck is a lender you can trust. Find out more at ondeck.com/twig. And don't forget, it's time for our yearly Twit survey. We want to hear from you so we can serve you better. Head over to twit.to/survey19 and let us know what you think. It's time for Twig. This week in Google, guess the show with the weird music. I'm Leo Laporte. That's Jeffrey Jarvis. He's a professor of journalistic innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism, sitting at the University of New York. Hello, Jeffrey.
All that. Hello. Good to see you. Glad you're back.
Glad to be back.
Are you going somewhere fun?
Yeah, it seems like I was on a plane last week at this time. We're going to L.A. just for client meetings.
Oh, okay.
Schmoozing and boozing.
Schmoozing. Speaking of schmoozing and boozing there. That's Stacey Higginbotham. She is Stacey on IoT.
Show off your T-shirt, Stacey, please, for Leo.
What's he say?
Okay. Let's see.
Breakfast tacos, I love you. And she's serious when she says that. She's serious. She introduced us at South by last year to the magic of the Austin breakfast taco.
Oh, so delicious.
You can't find those in Seattle. They won't know what you're talking about.
That's my new goal. I'm going to stop Twig, and I'm going to start opening my own breakfast taco stand. What do you think?
They're going to want kale and sushi on it.
You could. Or you could just hire Dana Perino to make you queso.
Oh, there we go.
Did you see this during the Super Bowl? This was the hot Twitter feed during the Super Bowl. Dana Perino, who's former Bush spokesperson and Fox News, currently Fox News commentator, posted a picture of, well, she says it's queso. It's a crock pot with a crusted kind of cheese thing in there. And doesn't look that good.
It looks like chili con carne is what it looks like.
I don't know what it is. Anyway, I think the mistake she made was the very terse caption, which is, "I made queso." Somehow it captured the imagination of a great many people.
Twitter went wild, didn't it?
Twitter went wild. Here's one. I made queso. It's a slice of Kraft American cheese in a bowl. That's it.
Brilliant. Okay, I will say, are you ready for this? Velveeta and Rotel.
Those go together.
Queso. Yeah. Those are the queso. I mean, I would have accepted that.
Here's Chris Hook's tweet. I made queso. It's the famous blood elevator scene from The Shining. I made queso. I don't know what this is going to be. The melting face from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Okay.
Because it looks like it's blood, I get it.
Yeah, okay. And then Patton Oswalt, I think, kicked it off with a kind of medieval picture of hell. So it was
fun.
More interesting than the Super Bowl, let's be honest. Oh, that Twitter. I don't follow Twitter, but thank goodness.
I was going to say, what were you doing on Twitter?
I have decided that if anything really of moment happens on Twitter, I'll probably read about it everywhere else, since Twitter seems to be the most covered phenomenon in the 21st century.
That's true.
It's disproportionate, I think. Although, fun.
No, I mean, there's a lot of people, a lot of famous people. I don't know. Yeah, all right. It's not mainstream media, but the media has never covered like mainstream opinions.
Right.
Well, I had an argument with Farhad Manjoo.
About this last week. He wrote a opinion piece in the New York Times. Never tweet. He said the journalists should get off Twitter. Now, did he say read Twitter or merely shouldn't?
They said they should lurk, but it implied get off. And then I wrote a piece in response, and then we were both on a CNBC podcast. Why am I struggling to find the word podcast on a podcast?
What do they call those things?
Fort Knox.
They start with really bad music, and then
we went back and forth, and it was friendly enough. And then Jared Lanier came on and yelled at me at the end.
Oh, Jared Lanier hates
Lanier
technology. But the irony is he was the king of 3D, of VR.
Oh yeah. Well, it's all these people
20 years ago.
Yeah, it's like Roger McNamee.
Yeah, McNamee's the same
Bush
thing.
On the way to Palo Alto.
Yeah. Yeah, meanwhile, he's made most of his money on Palm, of all things. I went to school with Roger, so I know he's hated Google forever. Never tweet. I kind of agree with, as you know. This is an old column, so it starts with a news story that was in the top of the cycle a whole 2 weeks ago. Oh, my God. How do you people even know what's happening? The Covington students, chanting in MAGA hats, chanting in front of the Indian guy, the pounding his
veteran,
drum.
Veteran.
Must, the American. Anyway, I don't want to weigh in on that because that was he's right. Example of like Twitter outrage meets Twitter outrage and everybody's all upset.
Just equal time. Just show my link. I just put it in the chat. Just so I can get.
Would you tweet it so that I can find it?
We won't discuss it.
Would you tweet it? Otherwise, I don't know where it is.
Oh, I tweeted it plenty.
It's sad because Twitter kind of killed RSS. Everybody said, "Oh, we don't need RSS readers. Anything that happens will show up in a feed on Twitter."
Yeah.
But your point is well taken, which is journalism. Is the conversation?
Yeah, when there are people who've never had an outlet and never been heard, and now they finally have a place to be heard, it's awfully snotty for journalists to say, "I'm not going to listen."
Yeah,
yeah. So,
honestly, if you're some normal, unwashed masses type, just because you tweet it doesn't mean you've got a big audience all of a sudden. And people
are
seeing it.
Not at all. But you do have the ability. And many of the people who tweeted under the hashtag Living While Black didn't have the big audience.
Okay,
but the hashtag was a platform.
The hashtag had an audience. Yeah, that's a very good point. Okay. Yes. I do love the illustration you used here, which is
Coffee House.
People may not know the story unless you've read Neal Stephenson's Quicksilver trilogy or a historian. The fanaticism, the faddish fanaticism that surrounded coffee houses in Europe in the 17th century. And in fact, this is where journalism was born, right?
One could argue, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
but a certain kind of journalism.
Yeah.
But that's why you put it there, I presume.
Yeah. And it's the conversation.
It's the conversation. I mean,
yeah. Pardon me.
Actually, it wasn't where journalism was born. It's where financial markets were born. I apologize. The stock market was born in coffee.
Well, okay, the argument is it's where the public sphere was born, but the public sphere was not terribly public. It was very exclusionary.
Right.
It was privileged to white people.
You don't need Twitter. Just get a gosh darn podcast, and maybe Spotify will come along and give you $230 million.
I keep hoping. Hello, Spotify.
Hello, Spotify.
What have you guys done wrong, huh? Huh?
So Spotify, it's now been confirmed, bought the Gimlet Network for $230 million.
They make good shows.
Well, they make 16 shows. It was Startup was the one that put them on the map. And then, of course, lately they become very well known because Homecoming, which was a brief show they did of their first foray into fictional podcasting, got purchased and made into a movie that's won a lot of acclaim, or a series, I should say, it's won a lot of acclaim on Amazon.
What's the multiple of their earnings got to be? About a million?
Yeah, but that's the welcome to .com bubble
Jeez.
Two. As far as I can tell, I was looking back, I was trying to figure it out. In 2015, they made $2 million. By the way, in 2015, we made $10 million. So I think we're worth $1 billion.
Yes, you are, boss. Yes, you are.
And they took a significant, I can't remember, $30 or $40 million in VC, right? This was the whole point of startup was we're going to go and create a podcast network and take venture funding. And actually,
and Chris Sacca is going to laugh at us because we don't know what funding is, but and cap tables are. But we still got money anyway.
I know what cap tables are and funding.
Well, as it turns out, the creators of Gimlet, Michael Bloomberg and
No, not Michael Bloomberg. That's the mayor.
Yeah, that's the other guy.
Bloom's, the creator of the Bloomberg terminal.
If you hadn't said that, I would have.
I screwed it up.
Alex
Bloomberg.
Who's a really good guy. I'm glad he's a winner. He's a great guy.
Well, and his partner, who was a business guy, business school graduate, knew what the real score was. It wasn't creating podcasts. The real score is creating a company, taking a lot of venture capital. Doesn't matter if you make money, and selling it, having a big exit. It's kind of more the Silicon Valley model than a content creation model. And Anchor was purchased as well, Anchor FM, which makes sense to me because that's a platform for making podcasts. Clearly,
that's a WordPress a podcast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I understand what Spotify's saying, and it makes it perfect sense. Daniel Ek is a smart guy. They're doing very well. What is it, 90 million subscribers? They just released their quarterly results. They've made, I think, $1.5 billion in profit last quarter. But there's a big hammer hanging over their head and Pandora's head and everybody's head. It's the music industry. They only make money if the music industry lets them and doesn't charge them enough royalties to take away all the profits. And they're really at the mercy of that. And companies like Amazon, Google, and Apple, which also offer music services, aren't. Because that's not their only source of income. But if you're Spotify and Pandora, you're always looking over your, you know.
You're in a bad position for negotiation, you're saying.
That sword of Damocles is hanging over your head. In fact, it practically put Pandora out of business. It's no coincidence both Pandora and Spotify are going after creating their own content so they don't have to. And then Daniel Ek said he expects about 20% of Spotify's content to be podcasts, or listening, I guess, to be podcasts.
It's the Netflix model for podcasting.
Bingo.
Or for radio.
Yeah.
Netflix is going to sum that up since we're short
Netflix,
on time.
Netflix. Thank you very much. Netflix did almost die, right? The movie industry said, oh, you guys are doing too well. They pulled all their movies.
Right. Well, there's still a question of what happens when, like, Disney launches its own service next year and some other things. So we'll see if Netflix's own content is enough to save it.
Yeah.
You know, but it was interesting. I was talking to a former major music executive on this trip I was just on. And he said, because now he's moved over to the newspaper industry. So I said, oh, boy, you saw one disruption and the next. What's the comment? He said that the music industry, of course, depended upon blockbusters. And he said it's really true now in the music industry that, yeah, maybe you get one or two of those, but that's not the basis of the business anymore. The basis of the business is finding a large number of popular enough people. And it's very bloggy and podcasty and YouTube-y in music. And he said it changed the economics of the industry fundamentally. Oh, and I think that's part of what's going on here, too. Yeah, it was interesting to me.
I thought it was big blockbuster acts that you could charge a lot of money for, and concerts and touring became... I guess that's for the artist, not the...
That's for the artist, exactly. Okay. And you're still going to hope for blockbusters in publishing and in music and so on, but the odds of getting them get lower, and you can't depend the business on it anymore.
Does it become like the VC, like one out of every 10 is a knock it out of the park, and then you've got four or five that are...
No, he said that's the way it was. It's exactly the model that was, but now you can't take that risk anymore. So now you want the, you know, it's more... who's going to buy Patreon, too, right?
10 years ago, Madonna did a deal with Live Nation instead of a record company, $120 million deal, and involved a lot of concerts and records, but a lot of concerts, record concerts, tour to follow. That was the model. But that's 10 years is an infinite amount of time now.
So, did you ever watch Amanda Palmer's TED Talk?
Yes. Well, which one? On giving, right? On asking.
On giving. Yeah. Right, on asking. And the numbers are fascinating. Her 25,000 sales of her album were considered a failure.
Right.
But 25,000 people giving her money, equally $1 million, was a huge success. It was the same number. The industry at the time considered that number a failure because it wasn't big enough, didn't know how to handle it, didn't scale. The new industry said, hallelujah, that's a huge success, and you get to keep all the money. or almost all of it.
I'm not sure whether this is good or bad for podcasting, because Daniel X says he's going to spend up to $500 million on deals this year, which sounds like he's going to buy more. Pandora has already started talking about exclusive podcasts on the Pandora network,
which is now owned by Sirius, right?
Yep. I think really what people are doing is looking at YouTube and saying, how can we make that, how can we make that kind of money? And YouTube, by the way, just said, put out numbers saying, YouTubers, I never trust YouTube when they say stuff like this. YouTubers are making, twice as many YouTubers are making money in the 5 to 6 figure range, which is a pretty broad range, everywhere from $10,000 to $1 million, $999,000. They're really kind of pushing the fact that people make money on YouTube. I don't know, more than a handful. They say double the number of creators now are making money on YouTube than before. I don't know if that's all.
Yeah, they keep on trying to sell that. So Leo, what would make you get bought?
$100 million check. I'm there.
Exactly. So why? But seriously, you have a proven, loyal audience.
So I spent some time thinking about it because.
But you did.
We have more podcasts than Gimlet. We have more downloads than Gimlet for most of them. I think Gimlet might have some startup might be huge, but the rest of them are not.
Right.
We have certainly more revenue than Gimlet. I think we're on pace to do $9 million, and that basically we're sold out this year, which means about $9 million. We'd do more if we had more shows. So, if you were a pure business calculation, we'd be worth more, but it isn't. And Gimlet and all these Brooklyn-based, former public radio-based podcast networks have the sizzle that's more important. The cachet that's more important. And I don't think we'd even be in the running, to be honest, which is fine.
You have a loyal – no, it's not fine. You need to get rich and retire.
Well, I would love to be rich, but that's not going to happen. So, I mean, I'm well off. I'm not going to hide that. We do all right.
But you have loyalty, and there's the direct relationship of a B2B world.
What is Spotify?
Which is kind of what you are.
Yeah, but what is Spotify? Yeah, I mean, Spotify. So here's the thing: Spotify's not buying podcasts because they have ad revenue. In fact, at first I thought, Gimlet's more valuable than we are because they do podcasts for brands, right? They'll do marketing podcasts. Then I realized, no, Spotify doesn't want that. That's not for Spotify. They didn't buy them for the revenue. They probably didn't even buy them for the audience.
You think they'll kill the ads?
Well, that's a good. There's a number of questions. My first thought was they're going to do what Pandora is planning to do, which make them exclusive on Spotify, which would kill us if you could only get us on Spotify.
Oh yeah.
Apparently Spotify says no. We might have a few exclusives like we did with Amy Schumer, but most of them will be available everywhere. So now I don't really understand at all. I could understand if the point was to generate more Spotify subscriptions. So they're exclusive on Spotify. If you want to listen to Startup, you have to be a podcast, a Spotify premium subscriber. Not the ads then, not ad revenue. They didn't buy it for the ad revenue. They bought it to generate traffic, more subscribers. That would make sense to me, but they're not going to even do that. So I don't, to me.
I get them buying, what's the name of the platform again?
Anchor FM.
Anchor.
Which I've used to make podcasts, and I get it completely. Because YouTube.
I don't get the other. Because do they now have to buy a music studio? Do they now have to buy a radio station?
That's the other thing. They've never attempted to make music, even though that's their problem is original content. They never went down that route. So I don't know. Spotify has 207 million active users, but 96 million paying active users. That's up 29 and 36% year over year, respectively. That's pretty good. That's good growth. By the way, Apple Music has also shown similar growth. Revenues, I got the revenues wrong. For the quarter, 1.5 billion euros revenues, but that's up 30%. 1.5 billion euros revenue.
Euros?
Euros. They're Swedish.
Swedish.
Right.
Daniel Ek.
Swedish.
I'm looking at my stats from Spotify. A lot of my audience does not listen.
Yeah,
on Spotify.
We were a launch partner with Spotify when they started podcasts. We were, on stage with Daniel Ek, the Twit logo, and all that. And I haven't looked at the stats, but I think it's a small amount because it's very hard to find. You'd have to.
Yeah.
If you search for Twit on Spotify, guess what you find? A bunch of Twitter-based podcasts. But if you do look for This Week in Google, you would find it. So, I don't know. I think it would be a good thing if every single one of you yeah, would just please start listening. No, I don't want to do that. The whole point of a podcast is it's agnostic. We don't care where you got us or how you got us. We want to be everywhere on Amazon's Echo. I think that's been a good model for
podcasts. It's the Dave Winer. It's the ethos of RSS.
Yeah.
Huh. I get a lot of people from Pandora.
Oh, do you? Really?
Really?
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's actually the second largest.
Really? What's your number one? iTunes?
iTunes is actually, hold on.
It's our biggest source.
This isn't a breakdown from iTunes.
And remember, we've been on around on iTunes for 10 years or something, so.
Yeah, I'm looking. My web player, surprisingly, is a lot. It doesn't pull down my iTunes stuff. Why not?
I think that's the point of all of this, is that it's changing, just as you said with the music industry, it's changing year by year the way people consume content. And I was pretty clear to me about 4 years ago that everybody really is going to consume content on their mobile device. And maybe that's through your website. I mean, I don't think you have to have an app. I don't know.
I get a lot. So other than iTunes, which I can't see, it's my web player and Pandora are about the same.
Interesting.
iHeartRadio. Who knew?
You're on iHeartRadio. That's nice. I don't think we are.
I did not know I was on iHeartRadio.
Anyway, what a world we live in, huh? It's crazy.
I'm like, I don't know if I had to actively do something to get that or what.
I think and you then, probably do, but I don't know.
All right. Well,
interesting.
So
iHeartRadio's tagline, all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts, all free.
They're all doing that. Yeah. So they're probably just aggregating. They find, Stacey on IoT, we should have that.
Apparently.
Disclaimer, I do have a day job.
Oh, we're there.
I work for iHeartRadio and their premier division. That's my radio show.
This Week in Google is on it.
Is it?
Oh, you are?
Mm-hmm. Wait, we are, Stacey.
Okay.
No, I work for iHeartRadio for the radio show, the Tech Guys show.
Got it.
That's
Thank
Premier.
You. That's very that word confusing. Means nothing to me other than you're fancy.
Premier is a radio syndication network.
Ah.
And they syndicate Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Leo Laporte, the big three.
Oh, excellent. Leo, you're in such good company.
And Art Bell's Coast to Coast. Oh, I meant it's George Norrie now. Let's take a little time out, because as long as we're talking about this, I should talk to you about the company that puts Twit and Twig and Security Now and MacBreak Weekly and every other show we do on your system. It's called CashFly. And if you like how fast you get our shows, you'll love CashFly. It's a CDN with servers all over the world, which means you get the content faster. A 100% service level agreement, which means for me, I never get a 3 a.m. phone call saying, we can't get your shows. When you download Twit, when you listen to This Week in Google, when you watch any of our shows from the web or from your iTunes or whatever, it's not coming from Apple. It's coming from CashFly. CashFly is awesome. We deliver petabytes of data each and every month to our viewers and listeners, thanks to CashFly, without a hiccup. And I tell you what, CashFly saves us money. With other CDNs, and I've lived through this, it's no fun. We've been on CashFly for about 10 years, though, so this is ancient memory. But I remember where you were worried, oh no, this show's taking off. We're going to spike the traffic. I don't want to see the bill logging into the CDN to make sure that you're not over budget for your bandwidth. Nope, not with CashFly. No billing spikes. You'll get a custom plan tailored to your CDN needs based on yearly usage trends. On average, customers who switch to CashFly, and there's a lot of big ones you can see right there, save 20%. So it's 100% SLA, 20% less, and did I mention 30% faster than other major CDNs? You want to be on a CDN. It means multiple sources close to your listeners. CashFly CDN delivers rich media content up to 10 times faster than traditional delivery methods. Just go to twit.cashfly.com, and they won't give you a hard sell. They'll just let you understand. You show them your current billing situation, and they'll show you how they can save you 20% or more. Twit.cashfly.com. They're the best. Facebook celebrated its 15th anniversary on Monday. Were you in Kirkland House, Karsten?
No, I was in Adam's house.
Uh-huh. But you weren't there in the early 80s when Mark was there.
He was not there in the early 80s.
I was going to say.
Neither was I.
No one was there in the early 80s. Harvard was a desert. So you were there in the 90s?
I was there in the very late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
He was there.
Early 2000s. Yeah.
It's really odd.
February 4th, 2004. Freshman Mark Zuckerberg. There's the cutest picture I ever saw of Mark. Fresh-faced Mark Zuckerberg working on Sony Vaio posted the first Facebook. Now, what I didn't know is that Alexis Madrigal was in Kirkland House. And so Alexis, who is writing for The Atlantic now, has a great story. Before it conquered the world, Facebook conquered Harvard, in which he talks to a number of people, including, and talks about his own experience using Facebook before it was available to anybody but people in Kirkland House, and then later in Harvard, and then later in other Ivy Leagues, and then in high schools, and then colleges, and then finally,
the world.
Yeah, I remember when Facebook opened up to everybody, and it was
a big deal.
It's a big deal. My old boss, who was a Yalie, was desperate to invest in Facebook, and I failed him utterly because the person I got to was. What's his name? Who
Chris Hughes?
Sued them.
Peter Tye?
No.
Oh, Peter Tye.
No.
Oh, who's the Winklevoss brothers?
The Winklevosses?
No. Oh, Greenspan.
No.
No. They've been sued by a few people.
They changed his equity situation. He was in the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Went to Brazil.
Eduardo.
Yeah, that's
Severin.
And Eduardo was trying to get advertising onto Facebook, and Zuckerberg at the time said, no, he didn't want advertising on Facebook. It was going to mess up Facebook.
It's interesting how both Google and Facebook, the early days, the founders said, oh, advertising is a terrible idea.
And then so I'm writing a piece now about my world, the media world. I'm calling it the scorched earth piece.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we're being nearly honest enough about how all of our business models are all effed. But as I think about it, I think... that Google and Facebook in the long term are vulnerable because advertising in the long term is vulnerable.
Really?
What's
going to replace advertising?
I think it's decades away in the market. You know, I'm not short their stock, and full disclosure is I have Google stock. But I think that mass media has been fully commoditized. It's gone to crap, right? It's ruined. Clicks have ruined media. Programmatic commodifies everything it touches. Retargeting gets in your face. The public, the jig is up on native. The jig is up on influencers. Advertising, because it is meant to fool you when the consumers figure it out, whatever fad that was dies, they go on to the next one.
This is why ad tech has become so horrific, is because
yes.
It escalates in order to compensate for,
exactly.
For this consumer fatigue.
Abundance goes up, or prices go down, desperation goes up. And so, you know, if you play this out, yes, Google and Facebook have everything now because they're the most efficient at what this is now. But I think they're vulnerable long term. I really do.
But
I think you're going to see creative forms of advertising pop up, especially related to IoT. I don't think this is good. I think it's a terrible use of the technology.
Like on Amazon's Echo, they'll start saying, you know, it'd be great if you bought some shoes from.
Maybe less Echo, because Amazon does have a monetization strategy around right. it, and the data is so valuable, and then they'll resell that. What's interesting is who has the trusted relationship and how far back can you follow that chain? And I do believe that trust in your brands will become a huge selling point, and that people who can will pay for the ability to trust their brands. But there are plenty of people who won't have the ability to play, especially as we hollow out the middle, or pay, especially as we hollow out the middle class. So we'll see.
Oh, that was chipper. Especially as long as we hollow out the middle class.
So Thompson in Stratechery, when he went through what went wrong with BuzzFeed, had an interesting sequence. He had a few interesting sequences. One is he does not blame Facebook and Google for ruining the news industry. But two is... I was thinking this through when I was incorporating what I was writing, is that Amazon, of course, relies on others' investments in manufacturing, marketing, and distribution, right? But then when it knows what really sells, it doesn't rely on any of them. It makes its own product. And it can make that product that doesn't require a brand and doesn't require advertising. Yeah, they're still advertising for now, but in the long run, the perfection gets them to the point where they don't really need the advertising. And my number this week was going to be, but screw it, I'll use it now for the good of the show, that one out of three major of top advertisers are switching off of Facebook and Google to Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's becoming a major marketing hub. But because they're all arbitraging data about intent.
All right. I'm going to have to go back to first principles, and you can walk me through this. Socrates, help me. First of all, advertising exists because brands, companies, Coca-Cola understands that unless you know about Coca-Cola and have an affinity for it, you're not going to buy it in the stores, certainly at the price they charge for sugared water. So isn't there demand for advertising created by companies making products?
Yes, but.
So are they going to find another source of that influence?
They're going to find, yes, there will always be some level of advertising, but the way I put it years ago and what would Google do is advertising is failure. The ideal is the customer already loves you and buys it. You don't have to
Word of mouth.
For it.
Everybody knows word of mouth is the best advertising.
Is ideal, right? So every possible way you can find through data and other mechanisms, which is where Stacy's point is right on, knowing people through their homes, every way you can do that to avoid marketing is beneficial. Now, can you avoid it 100%? No, but I think it'll decline because there'll be less and less need for it because there'll be greater efficiency.
This is
so what will we watch during the Super Bowl?
Football! Well,
commercials for blockbuster podcasts, Stacey.
Oh, excellent.
Like the Washington Post.
I do think, actually, that's one of the reasons our podcasts work. I don't know about others, but our podcast advertising work is because it's so close to word of mouth.
It's kind of
almost word of mouth.
That's really true. And it goes to Stacey's point about trust.
Yeah.
God knows why, but people trust you, Leo.
So Ben has his, I love his, he's gotten a little bit better in his hand-drawn illustrations, I have to say.
They are.
Ben Thompson at Stratechery. He said, this is the theory of what happened to publishers. Newspapers, and the top one is integrated editorial and advertising, right? That was the whole reason newspapers existed, so they could put full-page ads in between articles. And they would then distribute it to consumers, and they'd make their money. Then Facebook came along and integrated instead users and advertising, which commoditized news, commoditized content. It didn't matter where the content
came from. By
the
way, I can never get an answer to this. Is the word commoditize or commodify?
Oh, I like commodify.
Commoditize.
What's the difference?
It is commoditize, right? But it always tells me I'm misspelling.
Yeah, commodified is not a thing.
Oh, okay. No. All right, go for it, Leo.
Wow, I didn't know commodify wasn't a word. Turn into or to treat as a commodity.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, man.
So what is commoditize?
I always thought it was commoditize. And this is, none of no, my editors. No, that is not how you spell that.
Well, come on, Google, fix
Even
it.
Google can't figure it out.
Fix it. Commoditize is another term for commodify.
Oh, all right.
But look at how commoditized usage has jumped over the last 20 years, huh? Look at that.
Oh.
So I think you're right. Commodify is the old-fashioned way of saying commoditize. I like commodify. I'm going to use that from now on.
That's because you're old-fashioned.
I'm using the
fountain pen. Proud of it, Stacey.
I like being old-fashioned.
You got a problem
with that, old girl. People.
Well, in any event, Ben now says the new thing is aggregation, which is a kind of commoditization. Google aggregates information from a lot of different sources in their answer box. And the commoditization and aggregation have the same net impact, which is brands, news brands disappear. Mm-hmm. They go away. So
stay right there, please. That paragraph, while I know a lot of journalists disagree.
I don't think Facebook or Google did anything untoward. What happened to publishers, Ben writes, was that the internet made their business models, both print advertising and digital advertising, fundamentally unviable.
keep going.
That Facebook and Google picked up the resultant revenue was effect, not cause. To that end, to the extent there is concern about how dominant these companies are, even in the most extreme remedies like breakups, would not change the fact that publishers face infinite competition and have uncompetitive advertising offerings.
That is a neon paragraph. I think it's exactly right analysis.
I'm with you on that. We agree, Jeff.
But this ends up with something that we don't. This is something we don't. It ends up though with something we don't like, which is paywalls, subscriptions.
For now, but I think that Neiman had a piece that the subscription apocalypse is coming. I think we've hit the limit of people's tolerance for paying, I believe. And yes, the New York Times can charge, but you're not the New York Times. The New York Times just had its results out, and they're very good, and their strategy is working. They've executed well, but they're the New York effing Times. And I people in my industry hate me for this, but I am not a believer in paywalls. I think that there's Business Insider, which was all built on clicks and copy and stuff. Is that going to get me? Bloomberg?
So what's interesting is that Ben points to Bill Simmons and The Ringer. And The Ringer is a podcasting network that is doing very well in terms of revenue and unique visitors. Simmons is embracing his role as a contrarian in the media industry, where ad-supported business models are out of favor and podcasting is viewed as a low priority at the biggest competitors, a side hustle, not a core business.
That's true. Although that's partly because the people who run those businesses are in love with their print. I mean, even when I was at Time and had a well-established podcast that I did in my free time that cost me maybe $300 a month, they wanted nothing of it.
They also
didn't want the digital stuff. Like, I was brought on to help insert some digital blood in there, and it was just like a Sisyphean task. Sisyphean? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I love the Bill Simmons story, because he was hired and paid $7 million a year by HBO to do a show Any Given Wednesday, which flopped. They canceled it after 4 months. They signed him another deal. But really, it's The Ringer that sounds like it's the success story.
How much revenue is he getting?
15. Nobody knows, but they estimate $15 million last year. So I think Whoa. People don't know about Twit. I just swear to God. People just don't know about Twit. It's fine. It's just amazing. Anyway, advertisers pay between $25 to $50 CPMs for every 1,000 people. Actually, we charge a little bit more. Well, we're in the ballpark there. We go higher in some cases.
What was that again?
$25 to $50.
You sometimes it's as high as 90 for you, right?
Yeah, not lately. I think we're more, our high end is 70.
Yeah.
That's about CPMs for what we charge too.
Yeah.
So
The Ringer keeps two-thirds of the money. We keep a little more. The rest goes to Midroll, which is who sells their ad space. That's part of Stitcher. It's interesting. So, I'm going to make a prediction here. By the way, this article in the Wall Street Journal is from 2 days ago, so it's pretty up to date. I'm going to make a prediction here. Bill Simmons is about to get bought by Spotify.
It becomes their exclusive show.
Yeah.
I mean, that would drive people. That'd be like Howard Stern's deal with Sirius way back in the day.
Bingo. That's a good point. And how much did they
really
pay
good point.
Howard? Like a half billion a year, I think. Yeah. It was huge.
Well, that's interesting, too. So when Howard's contract runs, he probably has a non-compete. But would Spotify buy Howard?
It is, after all. I mean, I know they do video, but really, it's a radio show. Be perfect for Spotify.
He got rid of the audio, the video.
Oh, they don't do video?
Yeah. They do. They have it back on the app now, but they got rid of the shows.
Interesting.
So for about a year and a half, they didn't have video.
Yeah.
Howard ridicules podcasts. So, I've had this argument with him personally.
I know. I've heard. I've heard you talk to him. It's all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's all right.
Old fart.
Hey, you want to talk about Google?
I have the Google, actually the Alphabet Q4 results in my hand.
Your hot little hands.
And I'm going to tell you about them in one moment. Because actually what I have in my head is an ad for Grammarly. Let me be honest. This is not the Google Alphabet results. This is an ad for the best darn little writing tool ever. And I know you guys are professional writers. I am not, but I am enough of an egotist to think that my grammar is perfect. And I still use Grammarly because Grammarly is more than a grammar checker or a spelling checker. Sure, it does that, but it's really a writing assistant that makes your writing clearer. And I think that's really an important thing to emphasize. Grammarly, it's a communication tool. It helps you improve your writing. So it's mistake-free. I mean, that's kind of table stakes, right? You don't, nothing worse than having a spelling or grammar error in your resume or your business proposal or your college paper. That's not good. But mistake-free is just the beginning. You also want to be clear. You want to be effective. Grammarly helps even the best students and the top professionals to do their best work. So this would be a great time to check out Grammarly. You can get it in Chrome, Firefox, Safari, and Edge. They have a Grammarly editor. There's iOS, Android, Windows, and Mac extensions or keyboards, depending on what platform you are. Now, the free product reviews basic critical spelling and grammar, and that's certainly a way to start, but I want you to look at Grammarly Premium, because it's spelling, grammar, plus advanced punctuation, structure, style within context, vocabulary suggestions. It helps you be more concise, and it grades you on readability. And that's really important because a business proposal is different than an academic essay that's different than a blog post. Each has its own kind of standard, and you want to make sure you're writing to that standard. It just helps you communicate more effectively, and that's really, I think, a great goal. Stop making email typos on your phone. I know so many people have phone email signatures that say, you know, written on my phone, so please excuse all the mistakes. No, you don't have to. Close more deals at work with your emails. Polish your resume to get a new job. And I love the weekly Grammarly email because, you know, it says you used more words than 90% of the other Grammarly users, or you did this or you did that. It's nice.
It I really love it, too. It's like you're 99% more productive than the rest of the people. I'm like, oh, yeah, I write a lot.
Do you think they lie in that email just to make you feel good? I'm sure they don't. But
No, they are being totally honest and accurate, and I love them for it.
I don't know anybody who's ever not been happy by that email. Like, you're writing less than 90% of our other customers. Nobody gets that email.
Although they do tell you your top errors, which I always appreciate.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And I send to my editors. I'm like, oh, look, you're right. I am bad at commas.
It is commodify.
I was going to say, you know what? With the Chrome extension, you can edit your tweets.
Oh, you know what? Because Twitter won't let you do it. Let Grammarly check it before you do it. And it does another thing, which is really awesome. Every once in a while, Lisa and I both have this flaw. We'll write emails to a staff that maybe are a little brusquer than we mean. We just, you know, in a hurry, we write it fast. And Grammarly will say, you know, you could soften this a little bit. You can make this nicer. Honest, that's great. I like that feedback. Because there's no judgment, right? It's just a tool. You get 20% off right now if you go to grammarly.com/twig, TWIG, Grammarly, GRAMMARLY. There's no E in grammar. Grammarly.com/twig. That's another thing Grammarly taught me. Thank you, Grammarly. Thank you. Thank you. Alphabet.
Oh, here's the disappearance of advertising and the commodification right here.
Yeah, right.
Yes, it is.
Alphabet's well, in margins. A way,
yeah.
Shrinking.
Cost per click down 29%.
Number of clicks way up.
Paid clicks on Google properties up 66% year over year. Revenue's up a lot. For the last 3 months, $39 billion. That's a 22% year over year increase. Operating income, $8 billion. So they have it's funny, Apple has a better margin than Google does, even though Apple actually sells physical goods. Google's margin is only 21%.
It's because Apple is selling a $1,000 phone.
Right.
And they have services revenue, too. Right. So their profits are high on their physical hardware, plus they have the extra padding of services, which are...
And Google's putting more on R&D.
Yeah, probably.
Do you see Apple do a lot with... I'm actually curious if Apple services are higher margin than Google services, just because Google is much more efficient at cloud computing and delivering services.
So that would be kind of something interesting. Because, of course, Apple doesn't break anything like that down. They barely break down what services means.
Oh, a pox on them.
Pox right. on that.
And also, Stacey, don't forget that and Google makes a point of this, whenever people yell at them ruining media, Google shares a tremendous amount of that revenue with media.
Yes.
Well, it's revenue on a top line, but it's...
So, last quarter, Google's effective tax rate, I guess this is because of repatriation, right, was 138%. Or maybe they put the fines in there. I don't know. Do you know what Google's tax rate this quarter was? 11%. I think I'm in the 40% range. 11%.
My business taxes are about 25%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to do a Dutch sandwich and a Panamanian runaround.
Triple camelback.
Because I swear to God, the triple Filipino salt cow. Because it's just not, look,
you
they're
know,
not doing anything illegal.
I need to go multinational
illegal.
Is really
That's
what's
the
happening.
Issue.
Yeah, here I am in the good old US of A and in Texas, and they don't even tax me very much.
You don't even have state
all.
Income tax, barely. I mean, we have a high state income tax, but I wanted to hasten to say, yes, they're not doing anything illegal. The government, they're following the law. The government really is the one that's
the job of
possible.
The government to decide what they should pay.
Exactly. At the same time, I think there is a strong case to be made that companies like Facebook, Google, Apple, Microsoft are making money because they're in a country, in a society that gives them that capability, and employees and educated, and they ride on the back of it. They should contribute back to it. Now, obviously, they're publicly held companies. They can't say, well, we're just going to pay twice as much tax as we owe. They can't do that. But it just it bugs me a little bit. Almost 100,000 employees. That's a big jump from last year over year. Big jump. It was 80,000 a year ago.
Wow. How many of those?
They said they were going to moderate that, though. They said that's going to stabilize.
Okay. Google alone, advertising revenue is $32 billion. Other revenue is $6.5 billion. Other bet revenue is $154 million.
What are the other revenues?
By the way, the other bets lost $1.3 billion. So,
yeah.
Other
Google's
revenues.
Revenue used to be like 96% advertising.
Advertising.
So are they diversifying their revenue more? Is that just their AWS?
Does other revenues include the billions of dollars Apple gives it? No, percentage. They give billions to Apple. I'm sorry. Never mind.
Yeah.
Is anybody giving Google money? I don't know. What is that?
Is there hardware and other, or did they break that out?
I don't. Yeah. So
I would imagine it's other, but how much that can be? Well, I guess it
also would be Google Drive. Google.
Last year, their hardware, they actually, it was a surprising amount. It was a couple billion.
Wow.
That in hardware.
Yeah, that's right. I remember we were amazed at that in the show. Yeah.
I'm looking at hardware here. I don't see it.
So that might be under other. Other bets is. That's where Nest and Verily
it's
and
like X.
Weird stuff.
Yeah. Paid clicks on Google properties. This is the one you were talking about. Down year over year from 66% to 22%. Cost per click down 9% year over year. But it was down 29% last year. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm mixing year over year and quarter over quarter. Year over year down 29%. Quarter over quarter down 9%. So big drop in cost per click on Google properties. Is it the end of advertising, or I mean, is there?
No, as I say, I'm not going to short their stock. I still have Google stock. Right.
But I can't believe you don't make that disclosure every show.
He pretty much does.
That is the first time I've known that you held Google stock.
No, I've said it. The Facebook thing is I raised money from them directly. I own Google and I own Amazon. I do not own Facebook.
I own all those stocks in aggregate through mutual funds. But
an ETF is very different than something you buy and sell and pundit on.
Right.
I was surprised, Jeff. I literally have never heard that.
I'm sorry. I used to say it all the time. So
he
it's
did.
One of those cases
I certainly knew it. I'm not going to make him sell it because I did that once. There was a guy who used to be on MacBreak Weekly named Scott Bourne. And I said, Scott, you can't be on the show unless you get rid of your Apple stock. He had a significant amount of Apple stock. And he'll never let me forget that because I cost him a lot. I don't even know, like $100 million, like a lot.
Oof.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So, Jeff, please keep your stock.
Yeah, I don't have that much. I don't have that much. Yeah. Amazon's been better to me than Google.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. We all have a little bit of a dog in the Google hunt, whether you have stock or not.
But we do?
I actually, well, I think.
We're doing a show about Google. If Google went away, I think we'd be out of luck.
Well, yes. Okay, I gotcha. I'm like, we do? I don't
Not a financial stake.
No.
But, okay. No, and I was surprised because I hadn't heard this. And
I apologize,
as an old school journalist, Jeff, you know how I'm sure you can be in my head. I'm like,
oh, yeah. No,
Stacey,
I appreciate
that.
I'm sorry.
If we had to do disclaimers at the beginning of every show, we'd never get the show done.
Fair. Okay.
No,
right. Sorry.
I'm kidding. In general, we have very few conflicts of interest on the network. Alphabet's traffic acquisition cost. What is that?
Are those the deals to Apple?
Oh.
Yes.
That could well be.
And Mozilla. And
Came in at 23% of advertising revenue. That's why their margins are a little
low. They like media companies. It's all an arbitrage game. You buy audience to come to something to fill it out.
Right.
So you're playing an arbitrage game.
Their traffic acquisition cost was $7.44 billion.
That's pretty amazing.
Wow. Is that advertising, marketing? I think you're right. I think a lot of that's Apple. The fees Google pays to companies like Apple to be the default search engine.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go. Wow. Wow. That's just how valuable the iPhone is. Because, by the way, as I got told about 1,000 times, you can change it to DuckDuckGo in the Safari settings.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that nobody ever changes it. So it's worth that much to Google. Billions. Mm-hmm. Other bets are Waymo, Verily, Fiber.
Did Nest get put into the hardware division? Is there a hardware division?
I believe it did.
I think it did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
is that Alphabet or is that Google?
That would be under Alphabet. Well,
I think so. Yes, no. I think you're right. Yeah.
Okay, I should have spent some serious time with their earnings
show
yesterday
for earnings reports, but
yeah, but understanding the structure of the company would be helpful.
And it's also valuable to understand where they're making money, where they're losing money, and where things might be changing.
Yep.
I would be better informed. I'll be better informed next quarter. I'm sorry, you guys.
Okay.
I'm going to blame selling my house.
You suck. Are you actually actively selling it right now? Is that what's going on?
We are putting it on the market this weekend.
Nice. Congratulations.
So yes, a lot of work and a lot of paint fumes.
Over market value.
Oh, I would settle for market, but thank you.
May you get 20 bidders.
Two really interesting Verily stories.
Verily is their health.
Really interesting Verily stories.
Other bet. What? Okay, let's hear them.
So one is that they're opening an opioid treatment facility in Ohio.
What?
A tech-enabled campus that collects information
really
analytics and hopes to improve an outcome. It's Verily. It's not Google. It's not privacy. Don't worry.
No, I know. It's less that, and it's... I worry as private companies branch into these things and with the current lack of oversight in regulatory regimes.
Starting a non-for-profit.
Even a non-profit. I'm thinking more about accuracy of the data analysis and understanding how high quality it is. And part of it is like the tech ethos of kind of being a little quicker and research cycles being too slow.
That's what bothers me, is this kind of egotistical notion that, well, we're techies, we have a solution for every problem, even the opioid epidemic.
And I'm not totally against it.
It's an area that's ruled by emotions more than data, and so there is more data needed. There's a lot of people who are against drug treatments. David Sheff, the author of Beautiful Boy, talks about this a lot, as does Sam Kanonis, who wrote... a magnificent book on this called Dreamland. The AA world believes that you shouldn't be taking drugs to help you get off drugs, and the data say that it's saving lives. And so I think having a data-based view in that world is probably going to be a good influence.
So the new nonprofit, this is according to The Verge, is called 115. It will offer both inpatient and outpatient services and will, quote, use a variety of means to track patient behavior. And this is from Danielle Schlosser, who's senior clinical scientist of behavioral health at Verily. She told CNBC, you could imagine something as simple as people answering a survey or more sophisticated technology to gain insight of who that person is, what they're encountering in their environment.
It's your other sponsor, too. It's Calm.
Yeah.
Right? Which is there's ways that technology can help people at various times.
I'm more worried about Verily's other project, the smart shoe.
Yes, because I'm not going to like what it says to me.
I like this because IoT. My question is, how much technology and what kind of technology do we build into shoes? Mine is a bigger
Is this smart shoe
question.
IoT or IOF? The Internet of Feet. So, according to CNBC, Verily is looking for partners to co-develop shoes with sensors embedded to monitor the wearer's movement and weight, as well as to measure falls. The site quoted sources who had seen a prototype of the data tracking shoes, which were produced to attract partners who could help on the project. Not sure if it's still active even. This is more, I think this got more attention because of its headline.
Yeah, well, in smart shoes have existed for a while.
Maxwell Smart, iSpy.
They've been marketing smart shoes for a while.
AT&T sells smart shoes.
Well, no, they have a partner that they work with that sells them. And they sell them for fall detection and making sure older people or elderly get up and move.
That's good.
The question here that I have is I have a very deep-seated fear of some of this data getting out in the way it's going to be used. So they talked about, you know, working with, I think Aetna was one of the partners mentioned here. And I'm sorry. This is Apple launching an app with Aetna designed to reward people.
What if you got a discount from Aetna if you had Aetna shoes and they measured 10,000 steps a day and they said, you know, as long as you keep that up, we're going to give you a discount. Would that be a bad thing or no?
So the challenge there is once you start discounting that type of behavior, you kind of break the insurance model in a sense, which is healthy people subsidize unhealthy people. And while we're all like, well, we shouldn't subsidize. Well,
but don't car insurers give discounts to safe drivers? I mean, it's just it changes the actuarial table. They give discounts to adults over teenagers. Based on actuarial tables.
Stacey, I think there's another way to look at it. What you're trying to say is that you could call it a discount for the healthy. You could also call it a premium for the unhealthy.
Right. And the data doesn't actually show this. The 10,000 steps number was actually derived from like a study in Japan. So again,
that's the problem, isn't it? Yeah. And it's such a good number that you go, that must be true. Yeah.
So that's one issue. We don't know how, and we have no insurance and actuarial tables. The data that they're using, the data that's compiled into those tables is a long running. It's like in home space, it's like 10 years and like thousands of hours of data, which actually makes it really hard for companies trying to get insurance discounts on like their connected products that stop leaks, for example. So there's some give and take that needs to happen. But I do think that it's hard to authoritatively say for everyone or even for certain classes that some of these numbers that are good. And we could end up penalizing people who, again, can't take 10,000 steps a day.
That's fair.
Let me ask you this. Okay, how about this one? Premium for proving you don't smoke. I presume that's okay.
Yes, because that's a voluntary thing that most people can control. I mean, it's hard to get off smoking. And I think if you're going to do that, you should also offer incentives and discounts for smoking cessation programs. Mm-hmm. A lot of insurance
companies do, right? So then you start the line going down, right? So then is it sugary drinks next, right? Because you're pretty quickly into the same exact questions you're raising.
The harm documented from cigarettes versus like drinking and liver damage, maybe it's not all drinking. Maybe it's if you consume more than 14 drinks a week, maybe you have to pay, you know, more. I don't know.
But your point about the insurance paradigm is really good. It's really right.
I just, we track, there's so much bias in our data. We track things. And then also, how is that data shared? How does it, it's one thing to say, hey, you're not getting a discount because you're not smoking. A lot of these programs are trying to develop quote unquote health scores. So if your health score is 50, you know, you pay this much. But that's a black box thing where you might be penalizing people based on things that don't necessarily show health, if that makes sense. And how often are those revisited? They're not public. They're in, that's where I start getting like, I mean, actuarial tables you can get a hold of.
By the way, insurance is another industry that started in 17th century coffee houses.
Yes.
I just want, I'm just saying.
Lloyd's of London.
Lloyd's
was a coffee house.
It was a coffee house, yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Lloyd's of London. So there you go.
They insure like weird stuff.
I think podcasts are the 17th century English coffee houses of the 21st century.
So what innovation are we going to promote?
We got to come up with an industry quick.
Like,
how about this? Fortnite had 10 million concurrent players during Marshmello's concert event.
Which means so nothing to me.
That should mean something to you. Fortnite is a phenomenon, but I think the more important point is it goes beyond
Fortnite,
a popular game.
Wait, was he doing a
Marshmello's
concert?
Marshmello's a DJ, wears a marshmello head.
Did he do the concert in Fortnite? But aren't you supposed to try to kill people during the concert? Is that what?
I don't know about that part.
I'm a little.
In Second Life that people would do things. They would have events. In fact, there was one country that had an embassy in Second Life, which I thought was really stupid. But they'd have concerts, but it was very limited. What's interesting is, as far as we know, there've never been more than say 8 million concurrent players in Fortnite. So this is a significant number, but. It's also, yes, so people would go to the concert. I don't know if they were killing people. I don't know.
But that's the point.
No, someone but that's, see, this is my Marston? Point. This is my point. It is becoming a social network. And I know this is true when I see teenagers socialize in Fortnite. And which, so, because there's lobby, right? You don't have to be in the in-game stuff. There's lobbies. And I think Facebook's biggest threat is not Snapchat and its like and its ilk.
Oh.
It's Fortnite. Netflix already said their biggest threat is not HBO or Amazon. It's Fortnite.
But haven't we always seen these games that take over the world? I mean, you know, flying crazy birds was going to take over the world and the economy. Yeah. And then people get bored with it.
Yeah, Pokemon
Go. They
have
a Half-Life.
Yeah. The difference is in this one, first of all, numbers, but also it's a space. It's a place people can hang out. None of these other games were social or as social anyway. People talk to each other in Fortnite. You know, you have headsets. You can talk. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just, maybe it's just me as an old man not understanding what the kids are doing.
Kids are doing today.
But I honestly think Fortnite has, just from the teenagers I know who are obsessed, has more than just, it's more than just a game. It's certainly the esports, you know, champion at this point. By the way, Marshmello, wearing his Marshmello head, because he's a DJ, and the ninja.
You don't have to wear a marshmallow head because you're a DJ.
Well, yeah, I guess you could wear it around the rest of the time too. But
dead mouse. You got an excuse if you're a DJ, you know. Stacey. Anyway, you have an excuse.
There are DJs that don't wear funny hats.
Excuse me. Why
heads?
Are you wearing a marshmallow? Well, I'm a DJ. Oh, okay. He and Ninja won the big Fortnite charity tournament, so he's a good Fortnite player as well as a DJ. I don't know. I just somebody in the chat room says you're overselling this.
I just put a link in the doc, not for discussion right now because it's a very long article, but you'd be wise to read it. It does a really good analysis of exactly what you're talking about.
And what do they say?
They say that Fortnite's longevity will hinge on its ability to evolve and to be a social
network. Oh, clearly.
Network.
Yes. Yep. Actually, the title of the article, which is in Redef at redef.com, is Fortnite is the future, but probably not for the reasons you think. They come to the same conclusion I do, I think, which is not about revenue numbers or whatever, but they say business models hyped, cross platforms hyped, popularity is hyped. But there is an opportunity in Fortnite because of the social network. And of course, it will really come down to this is what happened with Pokemon Go and crazy, you know, Flappy Bird and all the other. Those were just what they were. And actually, I think Nintendo and Niantic missed a bet with Pokemon Go by not evolving it fast enough.
Yeah. Well, what on the other hand, Leo, Zynga, Facebook, games, yeah. Fake Hay,
Farmville.
Right? There were tons of games on Facebook. And in the long run,
didn't do anything.
Oh, I did it for a while.
That? What was that music service that you could do? Was it Turntable FM? What was it you got
that?
On?
Yeah, but they got in trouble because they didn't have a license for the music.
Oh, that okay.
That was another problem entirely.
I loved that service. We
loved it too, and it was social because you were the DJ.
You were DJ with your friends. Okay.
I think, though, you know, when we talk about, obviously something's going to come along to replace Google and Facebook. It's hard to imagine that right now. Because they're so dominant.
And it may be decades.
And it may be decades.
Or it may already be here.
And it may already be here. Honestly, it may. And I think if you're going to get a threat, it's going to be something that is kind of orthogonal. It's not going to be, oh, they just made a better Facebook. Or they just made
that's how all the good threats are.
Right.
I feel like we're being like, to win this game, the team needs to score more points.
The only way to win.
Microsoft tried to fight all the last battles, right?
Right.
Google has a search engine. We have to have a search engine. Google has this. We have to have this.
Right.
Right. The winner comes around with something new.
Fortnite.
Same with regulators. Regulators keep on thinking, oh, the search engine is too powerful. Well, there's other things. Google's a mobile company now. You missed the bet.
Before we do the Google changelog, I should give credit to Gina Trapani, who created the Google changelog on the original This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis, Gina, and I, and a mention that Gina will be on Twit this Sunday, along with Matt Cutts, who still works for the U.S. government. Yeah. Gina Trapani, Matt Cutts, and Dwight Silverman of the Houston Chronicle. So it's going to be a great Twit on Sunday.
Wow.
I'm jealous. And now, I gave Carson a little more time to play the change log. By the way, I love doing that to poor Carsten. And he starts going like this. Carsten,
we need to get you a Slack button, like a button that you can just hit.
You got to go study at the feet of Fred Norris at the Howard Stern Show.
Do you
all the sounds at the ready?
Do you? Yeah, but we don't give him the tools that Fred gets.
Oh God! Fred used to do carts. Fred used to do that. With
then
carts.
You really are slapping.
It was magic.
You do slap those in. And I still, even though I haven't done carts or DJed in years, still have nightmares that your headphones are wrapped around your head and you can't reach the cart and the song's ending and the record. Do you ever have dreams like that, Carsten? Like Leo goes to the changelog too soon and you can't?
Leo,
you ever have that dream?
Those are not the Leo dreams I have.
Okay, back to the changelog.
It was safer. It is Safer Internet Week. It still is because it's a week. And to celebrate Safer Internet Day, which was Monday, Google's making it Safer Internet Week. And they're doing a lot of things to make you safer. The biggest one I've already installed on Chrome, which is a password checkup. So password checkup is a Chrome extension you can install, and it will tell you if, A, the username and password you've just used is one of over 4 billion credentials and known to be compromised.
Oh.
Very handy. It will also see if you're reusing passwords. It will help you the right thing, and it's probably something everybody should install immediately. So none of your recently used – I'm just looking at it now in my browser – it's over here on the right. None of your recently used passwords are detected on a data breach. And then in the advanced settings, nothing. Clear extension.
Oh, this used to be a service that people charged for. This is great.
Yeah. Have I Been Pwned has been around. Troy Hunt's Have I Been Pwned. I don't believe they're using the same technology as Troy Hunt. Probably this is similar data, however. So that's good. Google has already been doing this, as you know. If your Google password is discovered in a breach, they'll reset it. Maybe you don't know that, but that they will. So they've been doing that for some time.
Where do we find this?
It's in the Chrome extension store. It's called Password Checkup. It's from Google. Don't use anything not from Google.
Right.
And then you'll get an icon, and you'll be alerted when you sign in with unsafe credentials, which is nice. Also, cross-account protection designed. It's kind of complicated. I don't understand what it means. In rare cases, the attacker is able to find a way into your Google account. We've built useful tools to help you quickly get back to safety. Unfortunately, these protections haven't extended to the apps you sign into Google with. Oh, I get it. So if you're using Google as your single sign-in, cross-account protection will help address that. When apps and sites have implemented it, we're able to send information about security events like an account hijacking to them so they can protect you too. So they give an example that if you've used Adobe to the Google account to sign into your Adobe account, it will be protected. And if there's an issue with your password on those accounts, though.
Oh, that's really interesting, because I typically don't use Google to sign into things because I don't want it to get data between different services, kind of like the right. Facebook sign in or Google
right.
sign in.
Right.
So this is actually an impetus to get me to actually use that.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
I don't know.
Making audio more accessible with two new apps. This is by the year 2055, according to WHO, there'll be 900 million people with hearing loss. So you probably saw this. Google has announced something called Live Transcribe. You'll need a Google phone, and I think they're rolling it out slowly, but the idea is with the app, you could just put the phone in front of you, and it will in real time transcribe what it's hearing.
The bottom link under Google is testing that with Twista and Bieber, and it's phenomenal.
Oh, I got to see this.
Yeah, it's a good video. Sorry for you folks who are off, but I can't. My own head can't keep up with the speed of the words, and Google is doing it. It's pretty amazing.
Okay, here we go. Oh. Finally, I'll understand what they're saying.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Oh, this is awesome. It's doing a really good job.
They can finally keep up.
It says, I don't, it's too fast. That's amazing.
Yeah, I guess it only does like...
Twist is too good for it.
Twist's flow is too fast. Wow.
And then lower down the page is Bieber.
Oh, my gosh. That is brilliant. This is from
isn't that?
Inverse.com. All right, let's try some Bieber. Bieber will be a little easier. Oh, no, this is Despacito.
Oh.
So this is in Spanish.
Well, not yet.
Oh, it's not. All this time I thought it was in Spanish. Why did it capitalize The Darkest Day?
Google loves random capitalizations.
Like the president.
Want to savor every moment, sleuthing slowly.
So it's not perfect, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty darn good.
Better than I am.
Okay, no translation.
Okay, it's not. It does do it in 70 languages, but apparently you have to let it know ahead of time that you're going to slip into Spanish. Because that turned that into... so making last long, but a silly money just...
Hey guys, just
never mind, forget
here.
It.
That was pretty cool.
Well, and I'm sure this is on the changelog. If we talk about the translation service that's rolling out, that's actually pretty cool. And you just say, Google, be my translator or French translator.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty awesome. I think, did we talk about that last week? I think it might have been last week. The Google Assistant's coming to Nest Secure, Stacey and IoT. What does that mean? She stepped away. Oh, my God. She ran away. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. Whatever I said, I apologize.
No, the dog is... there's people running around, and the dog is like, I want to be in. I want to be out. Sorry, you guys.
Blame the dog. I want to
I thought out. I was safe because we were in the change log.
You're not. I was asking
you're
a
always
question.
A reference for us.
The Google Assistant is coming to Nest Secured. Is that... that's an IoT device.
Oh, yes. That's exciting. So
see, I knew.
This is exciting because this is the little brains of your whatchamajigger security alarm system. It's the thing you wave your little tag over. It's still expensive, but now you can opt into having assistance. So you can, as you leave, say, hey, G, is it going to rain today? Or, hey, G, make a reminder. I need to pick up milk. I don't know. It's opt-in because there's a microphone on this, and otherwise the microphone is not on by default. So if you don't want a microphone in your house that's listening all the time, don't opt into this. If you do, great. And I have a feature that I think it would be even better if they added proactive notifications, because you're usually right at your door when this happens. And I want Google to be like, hey, did you remember your gym clothes today? Or, you know, did you bring cookies for the potluck?
Oh, nice.
That's what I would like. But it doesn't do that yet.
Oh, okay.
But I want it to do that.
Someday.
And I bet it will.
We all have dreams, Stacey.
Mine revolve around potlucks.
And queso. So Google created Duplex and, you know, played it to our surprise last year at Google I.O. Shock. Now they're fighting back. This just shows that companies are not monolithic. Software engineer at Google AI, Daisy Stanton, has talked about fake audio detection. How do you know when somebody's calling you that sounds real, but it's not? So they've created a data set of synthetic speech, thousands of phrases drawn from English newspaper articles, spoke by 68 synthetic voices. They're going to make it available to participants in a 2019 ASV spoof challenge. ASV is automatic speaker verification. They're trying to submit countermeasures against faked or spoofed speech.
This is why I'm not so worried about the deep fakes.
They're going business.
Oh my God, that video.
Yeah, it's the same technologists or brilliant people working on both sides.
Yeah, it's like the bad Russians. It's AI versus AI. It's the old spy versus spy comment.
That's right. Yeah.
It's now AI versus AI. And fine. We survived Photoshop, is what I've been saying on Twitter. We'll survive.
I will argue with you that it took us a long time to survive Photoshop. And in the meantime, many people's self-esteem was hurt. That's a counterpoint.
That is what led us to then solve it.
Okay, yeah, so people have to get hurt as opposed to thinking about these things in advance.
After Gutenberg, there was a 30 years war. You know, stuff happens.
I'm just saying, big picture, maybe. Individual pictures where people suffer through eating disorders?
Big picture guy, Stacey.
Yeah.
Well, as we know, range guy.
People with actual hearts are always moved by the stories of sad, pathetic, disappointing pathos.
Okay. Guys,
but people without hearts are not. I don't know. That turned out the aphorism I thought it would be.
No.
We're going to take a break. But first, I want to wish Zach.
First, George, you have to say goodbye to the.
Yeah, the goodbye changelog. Did we finish the changelog?
And that's
the Google changelog.
And now, real quickly, I want Zach to come up here. He's celebrating his 39th birthday. He and his wife flew all the way here from Phoenix, Arizona, because he is a fan of, I think his shirt will tell the story.
Yay!
This week in Google. Happy 39th
birthday. Did we meet his
birthday.
Wife, too?
Yeah, actually, his wife's a lot cuter. come on, both of you. Both of you. Come on back. Come on. John, take the picture.
I heard their origin story on the break.
Yes, they met at a bar.
And what they both do.
He was at the time in the Air Force at Travis. They now work for Southwest. He's a what do you call it? Co-pilot? Co-captain?
First officer.
Officer. There's the word I was looking for.
Yes.
And yes, sir. And she is a flight attendant, and apparently her hidden skill is making hats out of pretzel packages and swizzle sticks. So she is. Stacy and Zach. Is it Stacy?
Paige.
I don't know who Stacy is. Oh, that's
Stacy.
How
the hell you got?
I just crossed wires. Paige and Zach, and Paige is going to get me one of them hats.
Wait. So. Okay. Do you practice your repertoire of jokes being on a Southwest flight, or do you just come up with them and you're just like your natural self?
Yeah, I'm a moody female to begin with, so it all depends on the day, how many pretzel baggies I've eaten, how much
I knew, because when she said she made pretzel swizzle stick hats, I immediately said, you must work for Southwest. Must fly for Southwest. It was like,
they're the only ones who will put up with it. Yeah.
Also, and how many times has Willie Nelson been on your flight?
How many times has Willie Nelson been on your flight?
I've never had Willie Nelson.
Never.
Oh, he's always on my Southwest flight.
He's the most famous person you've each had on a flight.
That's because you're flying out of Austin. She's flying out of Phoenix.
Oh. Let's see. Who did I fly out?
That means you get Jack Nicklaus.
I have Ron Jeremy.
Ron Jeremy?
Oh, jeez.
Of course, you didn't recognize him. You had to be told who that was. Stacey literally does not know who that is.
I know who Ron Jeremy is. I don't watch porn, but I know who he is.
What do they call him? They call him the hedgehog, I think, because he's somewhat hairy.
I don't know that.
Paige doesn't know that either, thank God. Thank you, Paige. Happy birthday, Zach.
Happy birthday, Zach. Thanks for watching or listening.
What did you say? He said, who picked that terrible music that begins every show? And I said, some jerk named Leo Laporte. That's who. But now we're stuck with it. We're stuck with it. In fact, didn't somebody write to us and say, we want you to pay for it? And I said, no, I bought it. You can't ask for more money. I gave you enough. I'll tell you what the genesis of that stupid flute music was. He says, what did you say, Zach? You said something like, it reminded me of like Renfest, like the Renaissance, some like jester in tights.
We don't hear it when we make the show.
No, we never hear it. I haven't heard it since 1998. That's why
I hear it when I demonstrate it to people.
So I got to get you better music. I was thinking, you know where it came from? Remember William F. Buckley firing line?
No, they're too young.
You do though, right?
I do. Well, Grandpa, yeah.
I wonder, maybe we could just use the firing line theme. Here, I'll play the firing line theme.
Quite a different theme.
No.
Right? Right?
No.
That's what I was thinking. I thought, oh, this sounds like the firing line theme.
No, I'm with Zach in the Renfest. That's how I feel.
Well, I want that video opener with, you know, like you scratching your head with a pencil.
We're talking to William F. Buckley.
What you need is the good music that the IoT podcast has.
What is your music?
I can't do it right now because I'm tone deaf, but it's good.
It was a very misguided attempt to get Stacey to sing.
Is it the song that led you down the aisle in your wedding, Stacey?
It is not that
the
song.
The eyes of Texas are upon you. Now I want to. I don't remember. Oh, I like it. Ooh.
A little bit of Seinfeld.
Bang-dong. Slapping the bass.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Internet of Things podcast.
Where did you get that music? Did you? Is it royalty free?
I bought it.
Yeah.
I bought it.
Just
it
like
was
me.
A one time.
Yeah. Royalty free.
But I picked good music. That's the point.
That's the difference. Can we get the Brandenburg Concertos for our theme? I think it would be an improvement. John is the keeper of the theme. He says you can't change it.
I think you tried to do something weird. What's that once?
We did that ragtime something, but it was still under a license.
Right. Yeah, that did not work. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I could sing a song.
Okay.
Okay. What about numbers? Don't you have a flight you want to catch?
Are we
keeping you, Leo?
Our show today brought to you by On Deck. It's no shame, by the way. As a small business owner, I understand there are times in business where you've got a cash flow crunch. You've got to pay payroll's coming up, but you haven't yet gotten paid for the widgets you shipped last week, or maybe you're getting big seasons coming up and you want to staff up, but of course you're not going to have the revenue from that for a couple of months. You need financing. And what do people like me, small business owners, do? They go to our credit cards. That's a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. I got a better idea for you. On Deck. It's 100% committed to small business owners. Fast, easy, tailored financing. Fast, yes. You'll get funding in as quickly as 24 hours. They offer term loans up to $500,000. See the rate? That's about half your credit card. Lines of credit up to $100,000. But even better, no business collateral, and it won't impact your personal credit. The application process is really easy. You can do it online or by phone. You'll get approved in minutes. You'll get your money as fast as 24 hours. And by the way, On Deck, A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. U.S.-based loan specialists. They've lent over $10 billion to 80,000 small business owners. And on Trustpilot, they have a 9.8 out of 10 rating. I don't see how you get better than that. That is really good. On Deck. Remember that. It's a secure financing service business owners everywhere can rely on. You may not need them today. Keep this in mind, though. You got to get ease over that cash flow bump. It is a great way to get capital. Or maybe you want to do some remodels, renovations, Maybe build a new studio, ondeck.com/twig. And by the way, because you listen to the show, you'll get a free no-pressure consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists if you go there right now. ondeck.com/twig for a free consultation, A+ in the Better Business Bureau. It's simple business financing, fast, easy, affordable. Don't go to the credit card. Go to ondeck.com/twig. Time to wrap things up. I don't want to wrap things up. Stacey Higginbotham, do you have something? I know you're moving and you're actually tearing things out of your walls. Oh, are you muted or did we mute you?
Oh, nope, I muted you.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
I have an internet. It's okay because I have an internet service that actually a friend of mine used and said was awesome. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, this could be awesome. So I'm going to tell you about it.
Yay.
It's called AirHelp. And if your flight, if you travel a lot, I travel a lot. Oh, hey. Look, there's pilots that are actually here.
Yes.
It is an AI that actually helps you argue. It's kind of like that. There's a parking lawyer.
The London student who did a parking box.
Yeah,
appeal.
It's the same thing for figuring out compensation for delayed flights. So I thought this was interesting. I have not been on a delayed flight recently, so I could not try it out. But my friend tried it out and really said it worked. So, you know.
It's more for Europe, I think, than U.S., no? Or because the rights in Europe are more.
She was in Europe. Oh.
Because the European rights are strict.
Okay. Well, I thought it was for everyone. Now I feel sad.
Well,
I am sorry.
I would try it anyway.
Yeah. This.
But,
this.
You know, if I have somebody nice in the flight who's going to make me hats, I won't be so disturbed that it's late.
Yes.
I would still be disturbed. Nice. I would just be like, oh, well, at least
I've
got a
hat.
Yeah. I'm usually pretty I'm pretty chill when my flight's delayed because I'm like,
it's not their fault. Yeah.
I'm only, I get crazed, but only if I'm connecting. Oh. But I'm also neurotic as hell. I literally show up at the airport. There was that Onion story about a year ago, 2 years ago.
That's right.
Dad suggests family should get to airport 14 hours before flight. My family all sent it to me.
Yeah.
That guy. Leo, on the other hand, is going to be rushing to Santa Rosa Airport.
I know. I have a flight in 2 hours.
That's enough.
I think we should have some fun here and just keep dragging this on. Stacey, now is our time to get into a really big
Jeff, what's your number? What's your number? Jeff, quick. What's your number?
You want to hold your marriage intact. Julia Reda, a member of the parliament in the EU, Green Party, kind of a pirate by spirit, really fights for the internet. And Article 13 is back in
this worse. Oh, this is bad news. Yeah, because remember when we talked about the fact that Article 11 and 13, these are copyright proposals in the EU that we think are terrible. Remember we said they've gotten, they're on the back burner now. But what we mentioned was the reason they were on the back burner is many states thought they didn't go far enough. Apparently.
So 13 is the one about checking copyright stuff. So the big media companies
use publishers responsible.
Their, yeah, and that means that nobody's going to let you upload a podcast or anything because they're going to be afraid of what you're going to do to them. And so it's going to take away yet more of the freedom of speech that the internet, God bless it, brings us.
So why does she think it's back? I thought we...
Because a couple of countries kind of negotiated it.
How about 11? Is that
11? She doesn't mention, so I'm hoping it's still on, but we'll see. 11 is the... snippet law.
Yeah. Both terrible. But this is the one that would make memes, a thing of the past.
Exactly. Yeah. A whole language. I mean, memes are an alphabet of the age. They're a new form of literacy. They're a new form of creativity.
My daughter, that's what she speaks in. It's really terrifying sometimes. I'm like, what are you saying? Where? What? No.
So I gave a presentation in Germany last week, and I showed a meme, and I think Occupy Democrats. And I said, "This is a meme, right?" And then I said that I ran into Nick Kristof of the New York Times. This is now 2 years ago, and he blamed me for showing him Twitter. And then he said, "What's next?" And I said, "Memes, young man, memes." And now, by God, Nick Kristof makes memes. They're just little black boxes with a quote and a fact in it. But the point is that people can share that.
Wait. You're thinking that memes are new?
To Nick, they were.
Oh. I'm like,
remember,
hold
he
up.
Talks to really
hold
old
up.
People.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff. I was like, what is happening?
Well, okay. No, I was new for a journalist to do.
Yeah. No, I think you were right.
I use memes to illustrate my story all the time.
Because you are hip and cool and young.
I think we should. I was going to show this doodle for Google thing, but it doesn't seem to be working on my computer. I don't know why. It's just sitting here.
Oh, I have a good Google-related thing of the week.
Okay.
Change your password, you freaks.
It's simple. It's sweet. It's to the point.
Nest has been implicated in the news recently for having people's baby cameras, or people are coming on and talking on their Nest cameras to people. And the reason isn't because Nest has crappy security. It's because individuals are using their passwords the same way, the same passwords.
Right.
So Nest actually just sent out an email today to all of its users reminding you that if you use multiple passwords for different accounts, you are in danger of being hacked through no fault. Like, that's your thing. We can't solve that. I will say, though, that if you want to avoid this and reuse your password, Nest offers two-factor authentication. It's via SMS, so it's not the best, but my gosh, you guys, there's no excuse for your baby camera to be hacked.
That's right. And if you're in Japan,
if it's a Nest camera,
it will be the government hacking you, because the government has decided, as they get ready for the 2020 Olympics, we talked about this on Security Now yesterday, to try to break into all the IoT devices, any of them using default passwords or easy-to-guess passwords, and they are going to actually use a database of well-known passwords. They will break into your IoT device and then send you the ISP a note saying you might want to tell them to fix it.
Yep.
Wow.
We talked about that last week on the show. I thought that was a good thing.
Wow. This is the Google for Doodle for Google thing. I finally was able to scroll down. I don't know why. Maybe my machine just really is too slow to handle this. But if you go to doodles.google.com/D4G, they're asking people to doodle, enter your doodles. And a lot of kids do this, although apparently adults say it can too. This year's theme, when I grow up, I hope, ... What's your hope for the future? Doodle for Google. My hope for the future is never to see Jimmy Fallon playing the ukulele.
There are so many songs about rainbows.
Aww.
And what's on the other side.
Okay, you guys, this song makes me tear up every time.
That's it for this week at Google. This is a lot better than the flutes.
Article 13 is going to take this podcast down.
I know, we're dead in the European Union. That's Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University of New York. Thank you, Jeff. BuzzMachine.com, @JeffJarvis on the Twitter. Stacey Higginbotham is @GigaStacy on the Twitter. And, of course, the host of the Stacey on IoT podcast. You'll find her newsletter, free newsletter, at StaceyOnIoT.com. We do This Week in Google Wednesdays, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 2130 UTC. If you want to join us live in the studio, you can just email tickets at twit.tv. Celebrate your birthday here. We love that. But if you want, you can also watch on our live stream, twit.tv/live, audio and video there, 24/7 of something. There's always something going on. And there's always something in the chat room. If you're watching live, join them at irc.twit.tv. You can also subscribe. In fact, I think it'd be great if you subscribe to This Week in Google and Spotify and drive those numbers through the roof. Or any other podcast client you want to use. Just go to twit.tv/twig. You can download episodes, audio and video, and you can find out how to subscribe in your favorite podcast client, including Spotify. Thanks for being here. I'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.